Dustin Sweetelson with Mark Melusis here on VSiN Primetime. Appreciate you hanging out with us here. As we look at the baseball card coming up for Friday's action in the league, going around the horn, some interesting matchups. And I'm wondering, as a Yankees fan, what's your level of confidence, Mark, in Gerrit Cole as he takes the bump against the Minnesota Twins? Mike Paredes takes the hill on the road at Yankee Stadium. Cole and the Bombers, a minus 186 favorite, plus 153 with Minnesota. Total's 9.5, but Gerrit Cole hasn't quite looked like the Cole of old. Do you anticipate that coming at some point this year?
Yeah, at some point. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be Friday night as they open up the series against the Minnesota Twins. That's the issue when you look at Dustin's. Also, fireworks night in the Bronx. Ooh. So that's a good night if you're heading out to the stadium. So after this game goes final. But I think when you look at Cole, last start against the Boston Red Sox, got hit up early. I think he retired 9 of the final 11 batters and looked sharper. And as Aaron Boone talked about it after the game, got a lot more aggressive. It's not necessarily about the velocity. I think it's about the confidence that he's on the mound. And the Yankees, I don't think it's necessarily about a July start for Gerrit Cole. I think it's more a case of what version of Gerrit Cole you're going to see for the Bombers come October, the long run. When you look at this matchup, here's the issue you have for the Yankees. They can't hit. They've lost 7 straight. They've scored 16 runs in those 7 games. You know, Ben Rice has cooled off. At one point in time, I think he was, you know, upwards of 4-5-1 in the MVP race when he was, you know, hit north of 300. I think he hit 200 in the month of June. Outside of that, the Yankees are doing not much offensively. They are not fielding the ball pretty particularly well. It's been a slop fest. They needed the day off on Thursday. They got it. I think it's going to be another low scoring affair. I think until the Yankees get some of the guys back coming off IL, I think this team is really going to struggle offensively. Not saying that Paredes is some kind of upper echelon starter for the Minnesota Twins. I just think that's where the state of the Yankees lineup is right now. Could I find a way to the Yankees to win the game? I would take the under in the game at 9.5. I think it's going to be a low scoring affair on a Friday night in the Bronx.
Yeah, I like where your head's at there. Minnesota has so many issues playing the Yankees. This goes back, I want to say, the better part of a decade. The Twins do not win, whether it's regular season or playoffs, taking on the Bronx Bombers. It's a really wild edge. And I know what people are thinking, well, it's a mid-market team versus, you know, a powerhouse. But Minnesota's been good a lot over the last 10 years, still struggle with the mighty Yankees. A game I'm looking at here, I haven't fired yet on this. Baltimore's at Cincinnati. It's Trevor Rogers on the road for the Orioles facing Brady Singer. Baltimore minus 122 is the favorite on the road, plus 101 with the Reds. Total's 9.5. I'd consider the Reds at even money or over 9.5. I don't really understand. I think this should probably be a 10.5 total. I think both teams are going to hit. Trevor Rogers has been a lot better lately. I'm not sure I buy it. I feel like we've seen this song and dance before where Trevor Rogers goes on a run and it comes to a screeching halt. Well, he's facing a Reds team that's 4th in OPS against lefties on the year. They've got plenty of pop, 7th in home runs with 31 this season. And you look at how they hit him in their careers, very small sample size, but an OPS over 1,100, Blade and Ellie De La Cruz each with homers against him. And then a guy I don't really trust on the other side for the Reds, Mark, is Brady Singer. Pitches to contact, yeah. And in that small ballpark in Cincinnati, that can lead to a lot of runs. Orioles hitters, a combined 308 average, 973 OPS. Gunnar Henderson's taking him deep, 1-for-3. Pete Alonso, 3-for-5 with a double. A couple other guys with a hit apiece, but I feel like this is a matchup where we're going to get plenty of runs at Great American Ballpark as it heats up in the summer. And more importantly, Major League Baseball, if you're looking at reports, they're having an issue managing these baseballs that are being manufactured, not the same drag as the beginning of the year, which is leading into an uptick in runs.
Yeah, I like where your head's thinking, Dustin. I think we kind of agree on the first two games that we're taking a look at in Friday's slate. I think we're going to get runs in this one. Listen, you know, Cincinnati has scuffled along in their last 5 games. They're 1-4. They were winning a lot of one-run games early. They're sitting there 6 games under the 500 mark. You look at the Baltimore Orioles, you know, they could use a little pitching here moving forward. But I think when you look at this pitching matchup of Singer and Rogers, I think both offenses could get going on a Friday night out there in Cincinnati. So I would agree with you. I would take the over in the game between the Reds and the Orioles.
You know, I'm looking over at VSiN.com/MLB props. You can see the player prop projections as we have for hitters, for pitchers. I really focus on the pitchers for the most part. And as of right now, with what's available on the board, Kyle Harrison is the biggest edge to the under, the Milwaukee lefty going on the road to Arizona. Numbers set at 5.5. Opta AI has the under projected at -16.4%. They have him only striking out 4.45, and that's apropos. He's facing the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's going on the road to Arizona to do so. Arizona does not strike out against lefties. The fewest Ks this year against southpaws.
Great stat.
Over the years, they have been a really big lefty killer. Number one in batting average this year against lefties. Number three in OPS. In terms of home runs, you're looking at Arizona as of right now. Not as great with the home runs. Middle of the road at 16. But I don't think they're going to swing and miss. I'm going to look up their contact rate or their strikeout rate right now. But if they're a team that overall doesn't strike out, second lowest strikeout rate in baseball. I like Kyle Harrison under 5.5 strikeouts. This could be a really tough situation for him pitching on the road against an Arizona team where all the numbers kind of back them, putting up a good fight against him.
What's your take? I'm curious, Dustin. What's your take on the Mets as they begin a holiday weekend series down in Atlanta against the Braves?
Well, it's one of two things. It's either this puts me out of my misery and I go into full football preview mode. My old saying with the Mets was just get me to Giants training camp. If the Giants are in training camp and you're relevant, I consider the season a success. I don't believe that's going to happen here. The one benefit the Mets have is if anyone feels lower than them right now, it's Atlanta with the way they're playing. And for Atlanta, they have a different pressure than the Mets. The Mets are kind of playing free and loose. Christian Scott versus Grant Holmes. I actually like Christian Scott. The problem is he gets into walk trouble at times. Grant Holmes is okay. He's serviceable. Probably a guy that Atlanta wishes that was their swingman versus in their rotation at this point in the season. Total's 9.5. I'd consider the under 9.5 with the way these offenses are playing. There's always a world where the Mets offense doesn't post on the road in Atlanta. You just need Christian Scott to keep the Braves at bay. And so far, over the last 7-8 games, Atlanta's offense really hasn't been all that special. So I'd lean under 9.5. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of, amazingly enough, even with, Steve Cohen doing an interview and talking about the relationship of Lindor and Soto and where they are now as compared to a year ago and the firing of Carlos Mendoza, I'm going to lean Mets, and it's not a matter of where I think the Mets have all of a sudden turned a corner or they're going to get hot here in the second half once we get through the All-Star break. I just think they're catching the Braves at the right time. I mean, Dustin, this Atlanta team is scuffling along. I mean, and no perfect case in point than, we all saw on Thursday night against the St. Louis Cardinals, down 3-0 early, take a 5-3 lead, and they don't score the rest of the game after posting 5 runs in the bottom half of the first inning. That says it all about Atlanta right now. I think the Mets are catching the Braves at the right time. Now, the Braves might be looking at the Mets and saying, well, we're going to get healthy this weekend. I think Christian Scott, though, gives the Mets a winning performance and pitches well on Friday night. I kind of lean the Mets in the opener.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right, because I just like to have some relevant baseball here for my team. All right, last one in baseball that I'm looking at, and there isn't a number posted as of right now, but Gavin Williams is a good matchup for Cleveland as they host the Chicago White Sox. We're looking at Cleveland, a -136 home favorite, +113 with Chicago. Your total is 8.5. Williams' last time against Chicago, a couple starts out, had 8 strikeouts. Last year, he had 5-7. Feel like this number is going to be posted at 6.5. If it is, I like the over. If it's 7.5, I might wait and see if it moves at all. But if it ends up being 6.5, I like the over. Chicago's 6th highest strikeout rate in all of Major League Baseball. Anything else jump out to you on the card for Friday? Because if not, we will jump over to soccer. We have a few matches to look at.
Well, I'm going to give you a horse racing pick.
Let's do that, Dustin.
Absolutely. Friday.
Last time we did a show together, I think you hit 3 straight big dog horse race winners. So I'm all ears, my friend.
I did. So Friday, weather permitting, because it's really, really hot on the East Coast, is opening day up at the Spa at Saratoga. And we're going to go to race 10, the Sarnak Stakes, which is $150,000 stake, 1/16 on the turf. And I'm going to go with the 7, Glavin, after Tom Glavin. Tom Morley, John Velasquez aboard, 4-1 on the morning line. I think the pace is going to set up for him, a 3-year-old improving colt. We're going to go with the 7, Glavin, race 10, opening day at Saratoga.
All right. I'm going to tell you on that one. It worked out well for me the last time that we did this. Real quick, as far as the card coming up in the World Cup for Friday's action,
yeah.
One that jumped out to me, but the number feels right. It's Australia and Egypt. Australia to qualify is plus 115. Egypt is minus 140. But you got Australia, super disciplined on defense. They like to stay compact. They force ugly matchups. Egypt is very reliant on Mo Salah to do things, and now he very well could do it because he's a special player. But it just feels like a low-scoring match to me. Under 2.5, you have to pay minus 256 juice. I can't do that. I would actually think about under 1.5 at plus 134. I think this really feels like a 1-0 match to me.
I could see that. I could see that between Australia and Egypt. I like Colombia minus the $1.90 late in Ghana. I don't think there's anything playable between in the Argentina match with Lionel Messi, but the late match on Friday, I'm going to take Colombia. Love the way that they play. Love the fact of how high scoring they are, how the soccer ball moves. I mean, it's just fun to watch when you're watching Colombia at their peak. I'm going to take them minus 190 over Ghana.
Yeah, my thought with Argentina and Cape Verde is that this is where the rubber meets the road for Cape Verde.
Yeah.
I'm strongly considering Argentina over 2.5. Cape Verde wants to muck it up. They want to make it ugly. But I don't know if you're going to be able to do that against Lionel Messi and company offensively. So right now I'm thinking about the over team total 2.5 for Argentina in that matchup with Cape Verde. More VSiN Primetime coming up next on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on VSiN Primetime alongside Mark Melusis, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Plenty of action across the board as we get you situated with the live baseball. The Cardinals finishing off the Braves right now in Atlanta, 11-5. That game in the ninth inning. The Rangers have extended their lead on the Tigers, 6-3. We are scoreless with the Angels and Mariners. And how about this? The Padres strike first in the first against Roki Sasaki and the Dodgers. It's 2-0 San Diego in the first inning at Dodger Stadium. We will keep you updated on the live action all night long, but it's now time to talk a little bit of golf as he joins every week here on VSiN Primetime. David Behrman's with us now. Check him out with Sportsline and Betting with Behrman, available wherever you get your podcasts. And David joins us now here on the Progressive Guest Line. Now, David, full disclosure, I am not an avid golf bettor. I've gotten into it this year. I've had 3 profitable events, 2 not profitable events. I looked at this week and I said, you know what? I don't know a lot of these names. After one round here at the John Deere Classic at TPC Deer Run in Illinois, I would echo the sentiments from just 5 seconds ago. I don't know a lot of these names. Lucas Glover with the lead, 8-under, tied with Zach Blair atop the board. Then you have Lee Hodges, Steven Yeager, Zach Johnson. What did you see in the first round of action there in Illinois?
And it's not a surprise you haven't heard a lot of these names unless you've been following golf for the last couple of decades like I have. I mean, 2 of the top 5 guys are guys that won a major when we were back in college, and Lucas Glover and Zach Johnson. These are guys that won 2 decades ago when Tiger was relevant. This is what happens, Dustin, when you elevate all these events and you say this is going to be an important event and this is going to be an important event. Well, then you leave some that are not important events, and that's what you have with the John Deere Classic. But all wins count. If you're betting, if I'm betting, you're still going to get good odds to win these events. It's just going to be a little bit different. What we saw today were guys who know how to play this course. Lucas Glover, Zach Johnson are 2 of the prime examples. They played this 10, 12, 15 times. Johnson has been on the Champions Tour, and this was his comeback to the PGA Tour in his 50s to come and play because he's won this event before. Lucas Glover has played this event before, and this was the same event, Dustin, that was won 3 consecutive years by Steve Stricker, a guy who we were familiar with back in the 90s. So it's not a difficult course here. That's why you see the 8 and 7 under pars. Lucas had a great round today. I'm not sure he keeps that up. I'm looking a little bit further down the board at some of these guys.
David, how about a guy like Ben Griffin? You know, played well last weekend up at the Travelers, been really, really good over the last year and a half, 2 years. What about Ben Griffin the rest of the way in this one?
And Ben Griffin was a co-favorite to be the tournament winner in this one. He was at 14-1, which are not tremendous odds. I did take him as a top 20 and a top 10 guy before the tournament. But what I did with Ben Griffin, and it's not too late, he went out today and he bogeyed the third hole, and then he quadrupled his fifth hole today. He got an 8 on a par 5, had a disastrous hole. His odds went all the way up to in the 70s at one point, 75-1. And I'm like, wow, there goes my pre-tournament favorite. He then eagled the eighth hole. He wound up bogeying 4 out of the last 11 holes, including the eagle. Finished at 2 under par, which, yes, it's not 8 under par, but 2 under par is not bad for a guy who has an 8 on his scorecard. You can still get him at 30-1. He's a guy that, like you said, he played well last week. He's been playing well. Last year is a guy who got a couple of wins on his card and then went into a slump. I think that slump's over. I would take him at 30-1 today, right now, after round one. He got the 8 out of the way. If you look at what he did over his last 11 holes, he was 6 under par. Nobody else did better than him. And you could take him at plus 210 to finish in the top 10. This is a guy who was the tournament favorite. So getting him at plus 210, 215 in the top 10 is not a bad play.
David Berryman is with us. Check out the podcast and the newsletter, Betting with Berryman, at David Berryman. You can find him on X. Talk to me about Chris Gotterup. He is a name that I feel like every week a lot of the sharp people are very much in on as an up-and-comer. He was one of the top of the board guys pre-tournament. He is the favorite right now, tied for 9th. But to win this thing, he's plus 810. Would you do anything with Gotterup the rest of the way?
Because of what he did today, I do like him. I understand he's 3 back, but you have to look at how he played. He was one of the best in the round today, around the green, 2nd strokes gained, 8th off the tee, and 11th tee to green. So why is he 3 shots back? Quite frankly, he putted like my 9-year-old. He couldn't get putting down, 69th in the field today. If the guy hits a few putts, he hit the ball better off the tee, tee to green, and around the green than most of the field today. And if you look at this field, Dustin, you talked about earlier, it's not a lot of big names. Gotterup won in Hawaii. He won in Phoenix. He has 2 wins on his card so far this year. Had a little bit of a slump, but then he had T14 at Wells Fargo and then a top 10 at the PGA Championship. The slump is over, and if you take this field 1 to 154, he's one of the better guys in the field. 8-1 is not the greatest price in the world. I would not have taken him at 8-1 before the round started. But we've seen 1 full round, 18 holes, 5 under par, and he didn't make any putts today. If the guy starts hitting putts, he can win this. I would take him today at 8-1.
As you go down the leaderboard, you know, what about a guy like Tom Kim, who's sitting there at 4 under par after the opening round? What's your take on him the rest of the weekend?
The reason I like Tom Kim is if you look at the leaderboard, most of the guys at the top in the 8s and the 7s and the 6s were guys that got off early this morning when the course was playing a little bit soft. It got rock hard in the afternoon. Most of the guys in the afternoon did not play well. Tom Kim was one of the guys who did play well, shot minus 4. He's plus 200 to get in the top 10. He's still 27-1 to win it all. Why? Because he 3-putted 18 and, much like Gotterup, did not bring the putter today. 6th on approach, 15th tee to green, but 89th in punting, including the 3-putt. He's a guy who finished 15th in Canada a few weeks ago, 3rd at the U.S. Open, which nobody saw coming. Also, the other little thing that I want to play here is the fact that he is not currently qualified for the Open Championship overseas in 2 weeks. So a win here or a top finish could get him in. So I kind of like him here. Not sure he's close enough to win, but I am going to play him tomorrow. In round 2, if you look at the round 2 balls, I like him at minus 118 over Ricky Fowler. I think he has the edge there over Fowler, who's not playing as well. He might want to sprinkle the 27-1 if he's not too far back, but he's got to putt better than he did today.
Talking golf, David Berryman is our guest. Betting with Berryman, the newsletter, the podcast. Check him out over at CBS Sportsline. Now, I didn't bet on this event, but the names I jotted down that I was considering, they did not get off to good starts, so I'm kind of happy I didn't bet this thing. I'm going to throw them at you. You tell me, with the way they performed early on, are they worth a look in any way, shape, or form? in terms of a long shot play. First, it's Keith Mitchell. He's 123rd. I don't expect you to care about that one. JT Poston, 37th. Jordan Spieth with success at the course, 67th. Denny McCarthy, who I really was going to bet, and I luckily did not, he's 87th. And then Davis Thompson with the putter and the irons being reinforced here at this event. He's 52nd right now. Do any of those names intrigue you?
Denny McCarthy does, only because I was with you. I took him pre-event. I did. He was one of my pre-event bets at about 52-1, I believe he was. Didn't play great today, and he's kind of far back. And I believe you said he was, well, I don't remember what number you said it where he was, but I think he was 87 on the board. He was somebody that I really liked in this event. I have him in my DraftKings lineup. I did bet him outright on Tuesday. Would have been one of the plays I would have given out if I was on Tuesday night. And Postman's a guy who got off to a really good start today. Didn't finish great, but he was -4 at one point on the front nine, so I wouldn't give up on him yet. Keith Mitchell is surprising because Keith Mitchell has played extremely well the last few weeks, dating back to the U.S. Open, played well at the Travelers. He's somebody I thought would have done better in this event, but he's way too far back, as are a couple of these guys that we liked pre-event, like Eric Cole is a guy that we were all looking at, and then he's 140th right now after a terrible round, even though he's in the final pairing with Scotty on I believe it was Saturday at the Travelers. So there are a couple of guys who played their way out of the tournament, but I think McCarthy and Potson are two guys that I would still play.
David,
I'm curious here. Yep. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Mark. You're good.
No, David, I was curious here in terms of if someone came to you and asked you, you know, in terms of best advice for handicapping golf, what would that be?
Best advice is to not just rely on the outrights. Outrights are fun. They're great lottery tickets. They're scratch-offs. You're going to go throw a dart at 100-1, throw a dart at a 60-1, even play a favorite at 10, 15-1. But keep in mind, they got to play 150 guys in the field, or sometimes 70 if it's a shorter event. Look at the matchups and look at the top 10s and 20s. That's honestly where I make my money in betting golf. And yes, it's various. I've hit 3 outrights this year. It pays for the rest of the year. I get that. But the top 10s and 20s keep it consistent. It's like betting a normal event. If you're betting Dolphins, Jets, -3 at -110, you can get a guy in the top 10 at -110. You can get him at +190, or even like Tom Kim to finish in the top 10 at +200. Those are if you do enough of those, that's the advice I would give. I would also look at head-to-head matchups. Look at how they shot. Go look at some data golf and shots gained and see where the edges are, where you can find the matchups, because there's a lot of matchups out there. The books can't price them all correctly. So look at those. And yes, you want to win an outright, but a lot of the outrights that I bet and I win are on a Saturday morning after I've seen 2 rounds of golf. I don't bet much on Friday in golf. I bet a lot more on Saturday once the cut's made and I see who's done well and who hasn't.
He's David Berriman. Check him out. Betting with Berriman, the newsletter, the podcast, available wherever you get your podcast on X, at David Berriman. Appreciate the time as always, my friend. Good luck with all the golf bets.
Thanks, Dustin. I heard you say that the Padres took an early lead. I watched them lose by 20 yesterday at Wrigley in person, 23-3. I worked in baseball for 15 years. I don't think I ever saw a 23-3 game.
It's looking up for the Friars, at least tonight.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The field of 16 in the World Cup is almost set. We await just a few more here as we will find out who advances from Argentina, Cape Verde, Australia, Egypt coming up tomorrow. Switzerland and Algeria will have a say later on tonight. Colombia, Ghana also coming up in tomorrow's action. But Mark, just looking at some of these early matchups that we have in the round of 16, one that really jumped out to me just like stylistically and just based on latitude and longitude is Mexico and England, where it feels like there's going to be a lot of support for England, who's -140 to advance. Mexico's +115. Mexico doesn't have to deal with not playing on foreign soil. They get to play this in their own backyard in Mexico City.
Yeah.
But based on what I've seen from England, there's really not a lot where I'm like blown away by the English this year. They needed to pull a rabbit out of the hat to take out down Senegal the other night. I'm not sure they warrant being a -140 favorite here.
No, and we were talking about it a little bit during the course of the break. I mean, Mexico City, Sunday night, 8 o'clock. And you're going to get England and Mexico as Dustin's in Cabo enjoying a weekend. I mean, it is. I mean, as he's bringing in the 4th of July down in Mexico, which is going to be great, right? I mean, it's going to be fantastic for you. Listen, I think I love like the theater of it. Like Harry Kane, you know, what he was able to do late in that match the other day with the two goals to bring England and have them advance in the round of 32 was just utterly ridiculous, right? So I think it's going to be fun. I agree with you. I'd lean England in the match minus the $1.40, but I could understand those that say, okay, Mexico, they're home. They played really, really well. It's in Mexico City. It's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere down there. It's going to be like a road match for England. But I'll take the English in that one minus the $1.40, but I think it's going to be an unbelievable match.
We have another match, Mark, where it's one of the oldest rivalries in soccer, and that would be Portugal and Spain. Spain's won 15-7 in the rivalry. There's been 13 draws between them. As by my math, that's 35 meetings for them in their nation's history, but based on proximity, how close they are to each other touching, you know that it's going to be a heated rivalry. And looking at the odds, Spain's minus 220, Portugal plus 175. I don't know if Portugal's got the juice for this one. I just think Spain is on a different level. Spain is right up there with France. They maybe don't have the depth where France could probably field a second unit team, a B team, that could be in the field of 16 or maybe even the field of 8. I like Spain minus 220. I can't really do much with that. But one thing I'm doing here, and I kind of stole this from Mitch and Paul on Follow the Money. You like some futures? Okay. Well, you can add a little bit of juice to the future if you like a heavy favorite. So what I did the other day, for example, with Junior Caminero, I bet him 40-1 for AL MVP, but I also took the Americans to take down Bosnia with Caminero 40-1 MVP, and I took one of the biggest favorites in the UFC fight from over the weekend at minus 550. I took the Caminero 40-1 up to almost 69-1 because I added those big favorites. I want to take Spain and find a couple of futures that I want to pair with them to just make it a little bit better, a little bit more palatable, and turn it into a bigger long shot, because I think Spain is advancing in this spot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree, especially with the way that Portugal has looked up until this point in time. And you have a future on Portugal at 8-1 to win the World Cup, don't you, Dustin?
Yeah,
didn't you mention that earlier in the show?
Yeah, but I hate it. I hate them. I think they're so disappointing. I also have Colombia. I only bet two of those futures. I bet Colombia as well. I might have taken a little Morocco at some point here just because I just really enjoy them. But I don't know if I actually – no, I didn't. I only have Colombia. I have Colombia 40-1. And then
I like Colombia 40-1.
Yeah, the 8-1 on Portugal. I'm very intrigued by this Colombian group. Now, the matchup with Ghana, they're huge favorites to advance to qualify at minus 650. Ghana's plus 425. I'm a bit nervous just because Ghana is super athletic, and I think these African countries have really come to play for the World Cup.
Oh, they've been really good. They really have. But I think Colombia, is favored for a reason. First off, their creativity on the pitch is just remarkable. The ability to get scoring chances and getting shots on goal. I mean, I think they've had two matches so far in this tournament in which they've had north of 20 shots on goal. I mean, it's just been remarkable when you're looking at Colombia. I'll disagree with you when you're looking at the African countries. They've had a really good representation and have played really, really well up until this point in time. And have a little bit of soccer luck, they might have had a couple more nations advance into the round of 16. Unfortunately, it didn't play out that way. But now, as you mentioned, we're starting going to go out there and start to see the heavyweights. When you see Portugal and Spain, when you're seeing Mexico and England, I mean, this is when it gets really, really sexy for the World Cup, where you have some of these nations and some of the better soccer nations pairing up to see where it exactly gets decided. And it's been great up until this point in time. And I think the soccer moving forward, Dustin, is just going to be sensational.
Before we look ahead to the baseball card coming up tomorrow a little bit deeper, also analyze just big picture where we stand. Let's see if we learned anything earlier in the day with the baseball games that have gone final. So in our window, Guardians walked off the White Sox 6-5. We're both kind of in agreement that Cleveland at around 12-1 might be worth a look for the AL pennant. St. Louis beat the Braves 11-5. They had 15 hits. Walker, Church, Burleson, all homer. After Dustin May doesn't make it out of the first inning, the Cardinals cash on their own minus 102. We go over the total of 9 pretty easily with 11-5 score. I think the Braves are the story here, Mark. Even though the Cardinals now are, 6 games above 500, you really have to wonder for Atlanta with the way the offense has looked, and another loss for them. That makes it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8 of their last 10 have been losses. That division, you can still get plus money on Philadelphia. Would you think about them at like a plus 105, 110?
Yeah, we're sharing a brain. I see 1.25 right here for the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, I would be interested in the Philadelphia Phillies. I'm concerned here about the Atlanta Braves. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, not just on Atlanta struggles, but when you look at the Philadelphia Phillies being a win-now team, you could see them being aggressive at the MLB trade deadline as well. And Atlanta has gone really south. I don't think there's any – and we followed that game tonight – all together right here on VSiN, to be down 3-0 early, take a 5-3 lead, and then get daylighted the rest of the way by the St. Louis Cardinals and do next to nothing offensively for the Atlanta Braves. That's concerning, and it's been the better part here of 2.5-3 weeks for the Atlanta Braves where they have really, really struggled. They're one of the teams, that, along with the New York Yankees, that is screaming for the Major League Baseball All-Star break. They really are, but I'd be intrigued with Philadelphia. Why not? They've been a different team since Mattingly took over as interim manager for the fired Rob Thompson. Right now, they're plus 125 to win the division, and that race continues to tighten up by the day.
How about Tampa Bay today? You were on them. That was a nice winner from you. 5-2 on the road at Kansas City. 7 in a row for the Rays, the number one seed in the American League. They're 18 games above 500, and today, Ian Seymour, awesome again against Kansas City. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, 8 strikeouts. They have totally backed themselves into a couple of starters here with Seymour emerging after he was more of a reliever and an opener, and then turning Griffin Jackson to a starter, which has paid dividends. They have that. Cedric Mullins hit his 10th homer of the year. Caminero's in the MVP race. Finally does a homer for the first time in 6 games or 7 games. But Tampa Bay picks up their 7th win in a row, staying hot. At plus 550 to win the American League, I want to frame it this way. Do you believe Tampa Bay is built for the regular season and the postseason, or do you have fears about them living up to it in the playoffs?
I have a little fear about them living up into the playoffs, but if we're in a different league, like if we're in the National League, I have fears about that. Not in the American League, like not where, you know, we're searching and talking up the Cleveland Guardians a little bit earlier on in the show. When you're looking at the Yankees and they've got holes all over the place, when you're trying to convince yourself about the Seattle Mariners who come into the action tonight and they're a game over the 500 mark, right? So, you know, you entered Friday action where there were only 6 teams in the American League above 500. So I think when you look at the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, just in a wide open American League, you might be more convinced that they're built for the regular season than the postseason. But if they get there, who exactly in the American League scares you? I know you can make that same argument if you're a Yankee fan or if you're a Guardian fan. And the answer right now is nobody. Nobody really scares you like teams in the National League do.
No, by the way, an update on a baseball bet that may be trending in the right direction for me tonight, which is a rare situation I find myself in. Bryce Miller, as we're in the 4th inning for Seattle, he is at 6 strikeouts in 4 innings, 46 pitches. We're on over 6.5 at even money. We will not be shut out tonight, hopefully. Hopefully we'll get one on the board with Bryce Miller trending nicely. He's down to a 1.81 ERA. FanDuel usually is the only one who leaves this up. Now, he was injured to start the year, so the innings is always a concern. But American League Cy Young with Cam Schlittler as a big favorite and a young guy that I anticipate being managed down the stretch. I wonder if Bryce Miller has enough room here to get back into this conversation. I don't even see him listed. He's 100-1, so it's a super long shot.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, and listen, Schlittler has not looked good his last 2 starts. Last start, really bad.
Yeah.
Defense did him in up in Boston against the Red Sox. I think he'd have to make a lot of ground given just how good Schlittler has looked up until this point in time for the Yankees.
Man, this show is flying by, but we're not done yet. We have plenty to look at in terms of the Friday baseball card, World Cup, plus you'll hear from the head coach of the men's national team about that red card next on VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Well, this is an interesting development. Welcome back into VSiN Primetime. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That's Mark Melusis. Update at Dodger Stadium. We're still in the second inning. San Diego leads 6-0, Mark. Jake Cronenworth, Manny Machado, Jackson Merrill, all with home runs. Merrill was a solo shot. Machado a two-run shot. Cronenworth gets him for three. And they've attacked Roky Sasaki, where he's got six earned in an inning and two-thirds. I feel like Roky Sasaki's at some point, his agent's going to call up the Dodgers and say, look, it's not working out. I know he helped out of the bullpen for the World Series last year. We're going to give up the rest of this contract and go back to Japan. This isn't the right fit for my guy.
Yeah, he has been so bad. You know, after, you know, you thought he kind of had stamped himself for superstardom based on what we had seen WBC and all the, you know, and obviously signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He was the apple of many teams' eyes a couple of off seasons ago. And I'm stunned that he has been this bad on the major league level. And this is a Dodger, this is a Padre team. Also, the lineup has struggled. I mean, they came into this game, I think it lost five or six in a row coming to the affair tonight against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And here they are with a 6-0 lead on the road in Chavez Ravine.
Yeah, San Diego is a fascinating case study. 43-42. Machado's power's back. The batting average isn't going to get there. He's still hitting 193. But at least for his game right now, homering tonight coming into this matchup, over the last month, he had hit six homers. Tatis is starting to hit a little bit better as well. He's still hitting 283. He's swiping bags. You hope the power's going to come. They're so dependent on the pitching, specifically the bullpen. Once they can get to the back end, they know that they have this thing locked up. But when you look at the rotation for them, Michael King hasn't quite been as good as you anticipated. Walker Buehler gave him a run, but then he got shelled at Wrigley yesterday. They desperately signed Giolito. Sears is whatever as a fifth. Pivetta is not available. He's been injured since early in the season. This is why I think that they're the team that's going to try and make a move for Skubal. I just don't know if they have the pieces to make that trade happen with the way A.J. Preller has completely depleted this farm system over the last decade.
No, and he doesn't necessarily care about prospects.
No.
And, you know, but what does San Diego have left, right? And I think if there's a move to be made, if you're A.J. Preller, you're going to go out there and do it. That's where, you know, as we kind of circle back to the conversation, Dustin, we had earlier on in the show, and you're looking at the Skubal marketplace, or if another big name does shake free and becomes available, I think you got to look at teams, not that talk about it, but my wife talks about it all the time. Don't watch what people say, watch what they do, right? Watch the general managers across Major League Baseball that are willing to go out there and take swings. And Preller is one of those guys out there in San Diego that is. The Phillies GM does, right? Cashman and company don't really all that much. The Dodgers do, right? The Dodgers are another team. Don't necessarily care what you think, what I think, or how many stars do you possibly need. They don't care. They want to win at all costs. So if there's somebody we had there and they think they can help them win, the Dodgers are going to go out there and do it, and they don't care about what prospects they give up. So I think it's a fair assessment. The Padres, though, they've got to show their general manager that they're worth improving, and they've got to kind of build upon that offense. And it's great that Machado's had an uptick in power. It'd be great to see if his batting average can get above 200.
I was getting ready to say, every year, Moose, I get tantalized by San Diego because they scuffle for a bit. Their number balloons up for the World Series, and I can get like a 30-1, a 40-1. They're 70-1 right now. It's sexy and fun to have a 71 if it becomes live. I do not believe in this team at all unless they do make the move we just made for Skubal. Even I, who loves long shots, can't get into that one. Now, in my eyes, the U.S. men's national team was a long shot, at least to get to this point. I wasn't buying the hype coming in because I've been through this before. They've let me down every time I've had expectations. However, here they are. Round of 16 with a chance to take down Belgium. And oh, by the way, they are slightly favored to advance. Minus 120, where Belgium is minus 105. However, they're going to be without one of their best players. A red card for the U.S. soccer team led to Balogun getting ejected from the game last night. They finished the job down one player, 10 on 11. They tacked on another goal, but because it was a red card, he's going to be suspended for the Belgium matchup. Let's hear from the head coach of Team USA, Mauricio Pochettino. He didn't agree with the call that was a red card.
For me, never is a red card. Watching after on TV, and never was the intention to step up of the player. That was a normal action in football that happened because by accident, and it's never intentional. That is why for me, it's never red card.
He didn't like the call. He can't do anything about it now. FIFA makes the ruling. They stand by the ruling. They don't go against the refs. You're kind of in the same boat as me. Feels weird, all the confidence around Team USA and Belgium. And this is Belgium post their golden era, so they're on the downside. But I don't know why everyone's just so confident that we're going to roll and go to the round of eight, Mark.
Because they actually look good. It's one thing. I mean, we've watched U.S. soccer years, Dustin, right? And there have been times where they've gotten to this point, but, you know, they're holding on for dear life. They're actually dictating the style and tempo of matches, right, which is a little bit different. Pochettino has done a marvelous job since taking over United States soccer. He really has. And that's going to be a huge loss. And I think, you know, when you look at it on replay, especially in slow-mo, I think it looks a lot worse than what initially it was on the pitch last night. But unfortunately, that doesn't matter. As you mentioned, you know, they're not gonna step in. They're not gonna take away the red card. That's a huge loss for the United States team. I think he has three or four goals so far in this tournament, in the World Cup. Can they survive Belgium? I think you hit upon it. This is not your prototypical Belgium team. A little bit on the downside. I think there's a lot of confidence with the way that this United States team. That is going to be an unbelievable atmosphere on Monday up in Seattle.
$30 million in guaranteed prizes. Cash in this football season in Las Vegas, a three circa football contest. Entry started $1,000 with no rake. That means every dollar stays in the prize pool. You've got Circa Millions, 18 weeks, 128 ways to win. Circa Survivor, pick a winner each week. Last one standing is victorious. And Circa Grandissimo for the high rollers, $100,000 entry. Enter in Nevada, play from anywhere. $30 million guaranteed. Visit circasports.com for more details. Before we get out of here, I want to kick around the LeBron James market with you, Mark, because as of right now, Cleveland is 42% as the favorite at Kalshi to bring King James back to Cleveland for his third stint here. I bet Cleveland a week ago 40-1 to win the title, 15-1 to win the East, because I do think this is likely. Just when we talk about legacy, when we talk about ego for LeBron James, he wants the credit for getting a team over the hump. That's why I'm not buying the New York Knicks rumors. That's why I'm not going to really necessarily think about some of the other teams that have won in the past, like Denver, where he'd go be second fiddle to Nikola Jokic. He wants the credit. Cleveland has been unable to get over the hump. If the prodigal son comes home and brings them a second championship, that is the cherry on top for LeBron's career. He's 43% to go there. Is there a team that jumps out to you to get LeBron?
And there's no place like home. Yeah. Listen, I don't think it's the Knicks, because I think there's too much that comes with LeBron James. If it's his final NBA season, the Knicks are trying to win back-to-back NBA championships. And if there's going to be reportedly a documentary or some kind of thing going on, they're filming them every single day. Like, I don't think the Knicks are signed up for that. I think the other argument would be made, Kenny, you know, go back to Miami with Riley, with Giannis, and Bam Adebayo. Knowing that, you know, you've got an unbelievable head coach in Eric Spoelstra. I think Philly's interesting. You know, with Embiid and now Jaylen Brown to go along with two dynamic guards and VJ Edgecombe and Tyrese Maxey, I think that's an interesting one. But, Dustin, I can't push back on it. Listen, he's an Akron kid. You know, go back home. There's nothing like home. You go back to Cleveland, and you know, the cherry on the top is to win another NBA championship. The key to that, though, is asking yourself, if you're LeBron James and you're Rich Paul, if I go back to Cleveland, how close are we to the Knicks? Like, realistically speaking, how close are we to the Knicks? And that's the question he's got to ask himself. You know, it'd be an unbelievable ending, but does LeBron James landing with the Cavaliers put them over the top and get them through the East? And then can that team compete with OKC or San Antonio, say, for argument's sake, in the NBA Finals?
If he's going back on a cheap deal, like the report came out, it's not a financially driven season. If he does a Tom Brady where he takes a super discount, maybe he signs for league minimum. Who knows at this point? Because it feels like he wants to prove something. You throw him in a starting lineup with Harden and Mitchell, Mobley and Allen, Strus off the bench. They've got Sam Merrill. They got an up-and-comer in Jalen Tyson. It feels like the depth is there, that LeBron just becomes, you know, an extra piece that really puts them over the top. By the way, I should note, in Seattle, we do have a no-hitter going. Bryce Miller threw five, no hits allowed. Urena threw 4 2/3, no hit allowed. We are on no-hitter watch with that. we will keep you abreast on that here. So interesting development there as both pitchers coming out strong. And if you're a first five better, hope you had the under because it looks like Urania just got out of it in the fifth. We will go to the sixth, hitless and scoreless in the Emerald City. Mark, that was fun, man. Appreciate you hanging out with me tonight.
Dustin, an absolute blast, man. You're the best.
Awesome. Stay with VSiN all day long. It gets started 7 a.m. Eastern with VSiN by the books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis. They hand the baton to a numbers game with Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin. Then you got prop points with Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen. For Mark Malusis, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We'll see you next time on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.